We're live and we're local. This is a Juno Afternoon on Thursday, February 1st, first of the month, 2018. On today's show, Ray Troll and Aaron Heist will be here to talk about the Ratfish Wrangler concerts this week and the Alaska Salmon Forest Benefit. We'll talk with iconographer Charles Rohrbacher. Forrest Wagner and friends will be here with details of the Banff Mountain Film Festival and rally at UAS. And Nancy DeCherney will be here with Arts Up. Those interviews, national native news, bird note, music, and more right here on a Juno afternoon. I'm Shelley Delaney, your host for today. And taking a look at weather, partly sunny for the rest of the afternoon, with a high of 22, and tonight mostly cloudy with a low of 20. National native news is next.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Tribes in the Northwest have pledged to uphold the Paris Climate Agreement despite President Trump's backing out of it last year. Nikki Ouellette of Montana Public Radio reports.
The affiliated tribes of the Northwest Indians and eight tribal nations signed on to the We Are Still In campaign during ATNI's recent conference. We Are Still In bills itself as a network of companies, cities, states, tribes, and universities committed to tackling climate change, ensuring a clean energy future, and upholding the Paris Climate Accord, an agreement among world nations to limit the rise of the global average temperature to less than 2 degrees above pre-industrial levels.
And we take this responsibility very seriously.
Shelley Fiant is a council member with the Confederated Salish and Kootenai tribes in northwest Montana. She says they have been feeling the effects of a warming climate for years.
We see our glaciers melting at an accelerated rate, and we see those impacts in our forests, in our fisheries. We see it in our first foods. Our first foods are coming earlier in the season and for shorter periods of time.
The CSKT adopted a climate change strategic plan in 2013 that uses elders' experience and traditional ecological knowledge to outline goals and actions for 9 sectors impacted by climate change. Their plan predates Montana's energy blueprint by 3 years. The CSKT joins tribes from Washington, California, and Oregon supporting We Are Still In, along with 57 Northwest tribal governments represented by ATNI. For National Native News, I'm Nikki Ouellette.
Oregon's high school graduation rate has improved, yet minority students, especially Native Americans, still lag behind. KLCC's Brian Bull reports.
New data shows 77% of Oregon students earned a diploma in 4 years, nearly 10 points more than the class of 2012. But with the exception of Asians, minority students all trail whites. The Native American graduation rate is lowest at 59%. Yet it's still up nearly 6 percentage points from 4 years ago.
I think we're headed in the right direction.
April Campbell is Indian Education Advisor with the State Department of Education. The Confederated Tribes of Grand Ronde member says Native students struggle with racism, historical trauma, and poverty. But officials have taken initiative to improve attendance. Campbell says the passage of Senate Bill 13 will also help.
$2 million was set aside to develop 4th, 8th, and 10th grade American Indian curriculum. Students need to see themselves in the curriculum and in the classroom. Shifting what we've heard a lot from our families, not being seen, kind of that invisibility, to becoming visible.
Oregon's graduation rate is still below the national average of 84%. For National Native News, I'm Brian Bull.
Members of the Native American community and the group Arizona to Rally Against Native Mascots gathered at the Arizona Capitol Wednesday to discuss state lawmaker Eric Deschini's bill, which seeks to prohibit Indian mascots and logos from being displayed in publicly funded stadiums and multipurpose facilities. Under the bill, any federally recognized tribe could prohibit teams, including the Washington NFL team, from displaying images found disparaging to Native Americans. Vice President of the Navajo Nation, Jonathan Nez, was among speakers in support of the bill. According to groups involved in the national Change the Mascot movement, Indian mascots promote negative stereotypes and dehumanize Native people. Tribal and North Dakota officials worked on strengthening relationships this week during a 2-day conference, which wrapped up in Bismarck Wednesday. Energy, treaties, and economic development were among topics. Leaders have been working on repairing relations after activity at Standing Rock over the Dakota Access Pipeline caused tension. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service.
Support for law and justice-related programming provided by Hobbs, Strauss, Dean & Walker, LLP, a national law firm dedicated to promoting and defending tribal rights for more than 30 years. More information available at HobbsStrauss.com.
When you file online for your PFD, every Alaskan can support great causes like National Native News. Just select KNBA-FM, Kewaunik Broadcast Corporation. With your support, you can help us make a difference in our community.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
You're listening to A Juno Afternoon, and I'm your host today, Shelley Delaney, and here with me in the studio is the famous Alaskan and very talented musician, Aaron Heiss. Welcome to the show.
Thanks.
And Aaron, who's this friend you brought with you today?
He's a local character, local Southeast Alaska character by the name of Rachel.
Uncle Ray to you.
My funky unky,
that's me.
That's awesome. Yeah. All right. Well, welcome to the show, Aaron Heiss and Ray Troll, author, musician, scientist, humorist, and Finn artist.
Yo!
And Aaron, you're here representing the American Salmon Forest, where you're the outreach coordinator.
That's right. Yeah.
Great. Well, thank you both very much for being here. I'm really excited to talk to you both today.
Thanks for having us.
Sure. So, Ray, you and your band are playing two concerts here in Juneau, one tonight.
We are, indeed.
One tomorrow.
Ratfish Wranglers are in town.
And my first question to you is, what's a ratfish?
Oh, well, let's see. We only have about 20 minutes to talk. I could fill up a lot of that talking about ratfish. But ratfish are really cool, kind of horrible-looking fish. They're sort of frightening-looking, but it's a terrible beauty is what I like to say. They're cousins of the sharks, and they're out there in the waters right now listening. And they're really, they're spotty and very cool.
Is it true that you have a species of ratfish named after you?
This is true. The local species is Hydrolagus coelii. Hydrolagus means water rabbit because they have these sort of weird little buck teeth. And, they have that rat-like tail. But my species is called Hydrolagus trolli. And they first found it off the coast of New Zealand back in the 1980s. And then actually I was really excited because last year or maybe just the year before they found them off the coast of California. So my species is moving around the world.
That is a pretty cool claim to fame.
It is. You know, and I'm very honored by it. I know this ratfish scientist and she knows that I've done a lot to raise ratfish consciousness wherever I go, especially with this band. So she decided to reward me with my efforts. And this poor creature will forever bear my name. So whenever I'm long gone, there'll still be Hydrolagus trolli out there in the ocean.
That's pretty awesome. And so a ratfish wrangler, have you ever personally wrangled a ratfish or anyone in the band?
I've wrangled many a ratfish, and actually we call it the Wranglers because we do. When we see talented folks, we wrangle them in, and that's really how the band kind of started. We started wrangling folks, and actually we have wrangled local fiddle player Bob Banghart. He's been on all three of our albums, and so he's going to join us tonight. We're playing a TV show tonight at 360. And we are doing that in a few hours, actually. We're doing that at 7 o'clock tonight. And then, of course, we're here for the big dance tomorrow night.
At the Jack.
Cool. Also at the same time, 7 o'clock, right?
7 o'clock, yeah.
Cool. All right, we'll definitely talk some more about that. I have another question for you.
You do?
Yes.
Yes, Shelley.
Many more. It's almost as if I prepared for hours. Okay. Is it also true that you solved the mystery of the Helicoprion? I hope I said that right.
I was Helicoprion.
Helicoprion, thank you.
Some people say Helicoprion. We've come to call it the buzzsaw shark. And wouldn't you know it, actually, that the closest living relative is a ratfish. It's actually closer to ratfish. It is. It's actually kind of weird. It's closer to ratfish than it is to a shark. But it's in the shark family. It's a prehistoric critter. And I've had a few museum exhibits here in Juneau. Wait, what time is this? Here in Juneau over the years. And I had a shark alphabet exhibit here back in 2005-ish, I think. And the buzzsaw shark was part of that. And we call it the buzzsaw shark.
Did you coin that term, buzzsaw or buzz shark?
Yeah. Actually, I used to call it the world tooth shark. but we decided that it had more buzz if it, you know, was the buzzsaw shark. But it's this very mysterious-looking fossil that had been found over 100 years ago, and scientists never really understood how it worked. And over 100 years, many people made many guesses, but I helped kind of inspire a team of these young Idaho scientists that got bitten with the fever. And together, we brought in other scientists, and we actually CT scanned the fossil and figured out where this beautiful spiral of teeth is actually in the middle of the lower jaw. And the upper jaw doesn't have any teeth in these flat teeth. But the upper jaw was semi-fused to the cranium, which actually aligned it with the ratfish clan. So bring it back to the ratfish. So,
yeah. I have to say, just based on the jaw alone, it doesn't look like it would go in the middle of the mouth. It doesn't look like they could close their mouth. This ratfish or helicoprian, very interesting.
The buzzsaw shark.
The buzzsaw shark. You should Google it if you're listening.
Google it.
So much of your artwork and your music combine science, fish, and humor. What inspired all those puns? How do you come up with them all?
I was a smart aleck, I guess, my entire life. Mad Magazine informed a lot of my work, you know, when I was a kid. I mean, I couldn't wait for the latest edition of Alfred E. Newman and Mad Magazine. And, of course, the 60s were good to me, man. Grew up on Monty Python and all that kind of good stuff and always have loved a good surrealistic humor. And so humor kind of runs its way through my art, but also these weird puns would occur to me. And way back when I moved to Ketchikan in 1983, and shortly after that, this person, actually right before I got there, this person to my right here, my niece was born.
Very nice.
I met my wife in Ketchikan, and we would babysit young Aaron.
35 years ago,
the truth be told. Yeah, this month. Yeah. So I've been here 35 years. And anyways, I'm moving to Alaska. I was in the middle of this fishy culture. I was doing sort of fishy art before I got here, but actually when I got here to Alaska, that just cemented it, and my career kind of started building from there. But it was Aaron's mother, Kate, that brought me up, Kate Troll, my big sister. And she and her husband, Bill Hansen, Aaron's father, had a small little fish store. So I came up to be a fishmonger in the summer of 83, and that was my job, to be a monger of fish. And one thing led to another, and here I am all these years later.
Yeah, fish are pretty funny, for sure.
Yeah.
Do you, in your opinion, what's the funniest pun you've ever come up with?
Oh, can I think on that one? The funny off the top of my head?
I'll tell you my favorite.
Tell me one.
Octopi Wall Street.
Octopi Wall Street, yeah. That was brilliant, man.
Yeah.
People bounce them off of me every now and then. You know, they'll send me an email. Hey, Ray, have you ever thought of...
Like I did before the interview.
Yeah. Like, oh, that's brilliant. I love it.
Cool. All right. Well, back to the music. I understand you got your start by hijacking a couple of high school students' band, and that worked out pretty well. You're still together, still playing with them?
When the fishmonging thing in 1983 and 1984, I did like many people do. I became a substitute teacher to kind of get by. I was doing my artwork and all that. But I was a substitute teacher at Ketchikan High School, the Juno Douglas Rivals, you know, oh, those Ketchikan Kings, and oh, the Juno Douglas Bears. But there I was, and substitute art teacher, and there's this couple of smart alecky kids in the art class, and one of them was this young fellow by the name of Russell Wodehouse, and he was in a band called the Squawking Fish, and I liked what they were doing, and I was they actually say that it was inappropriate of me to join their band, but I don't know. I think it's kind of cool if your substitute art teacher because he wants to be in your band, and everything was above board. We did it all after hours, but I ended up joining the band, and they're about 12 years younger than me, those young whippersnappers. But here we are 34 years later, and we're still playing music and writing music. Russ and I write a lot of the tunes, and Shauna's started writing tunes now, too, and the band has started writing tunes. And, yeah, we do all these crazy sort of weird science-y fishy, nerdy things.
Yeah, it's been described as, the band sound has been described as an extension of your visual artwork. Would you say that's accurate? I mean, some of the songs even have the same titles of
Yeah. Ain't No Nookie Like Chinookie. But it's a song, too. Hey, Spawn and Die. It's also a song.
Fish Worship. Which Fish is Worship. What I'm going to play at the end of the interview.
Fish Worship. It ain't wrong. So, yeah.
Cool. All right. And now this next question, and we'll wrap things up after this. The next question actually comes from my friend Kate in Louisville, Kentucky, who is a professor of geology and paleontology.
Oh, she is.
And a big fan of yours. And she wanted to know, have you ever encountered any creationists that maybe didn't appreciate your style?
Every now and then, yeah. But there it is, you know. People have the freedom to choose what they want to believe. But you know, I think that science is science. So there you have it. The proof is in the rock. The data is in the strata. And the rocks tell us many things. And I think in order to know where we're going, it's very important to know your past. And I think it's very important to know the correct history of the earth. And really, I think that paleontology, to get heavy here for a second, you know, is a very relevant science because really, you know, we collectively know that something's going on strange in our planet now, right? Things seem to be shifting. The climate seems to be changing. And really, to get an understanding of where we are going, we have to look to the past to see what's happened in the past and realize that this is a, you know, it seems like a big planet, but it's a small planet with this, you know, a pretty big ecosystem, but a fragile ecosystem. And one thing is linked to another. And really to see the complete history of life. And so that's why the band actually has songs about geologic ages. And we're going to play at Harborview Elementary School tomorrow. And we've written a song for kids that learn their geologic ages and really to be important, responsible citizens of the planet. So we're actually underneath all the humor. There's a real message there.
Well said, sir. It's pretty rad.
Yeah. Trying to say it.
All right. Now, Aaron,
microphone drop. Mic drop.
Yeah, that's a good one to go out on. But I've got more questions for Aaron. Aaron, can you talk a little bit about your organization, the American Salmon Forest and the sort of sister organization, maybe Trout Unlimited?
Yeah. So American Salmon Forest, it's really a coalition that is focused on the Tongass National Forest and specifically on preserving and defending sort of the best of the best salmon and trout habitat in the Tongass National Forest. So Trout Unlimited is one of the nonprofit organizations that is a piece of American Salmon Forest. And so we're bringing Ray up to do this concert because it's actually a really great fit. Part of why American Salmon Forest is called American Salmon Forest is that the salmon actually feed the trees. And I feel like Ray's art is maybe the first place that I actually ever heard about that because is it isotopes? Like,
yeah, the isotopes are in the trees. So the salmon are actually inside the trees, man.
Yeah. So
kind of mind-blowing.
The Tongass, I mean, we all live in it, and it's this amazing – it's the nation's largest national forest, and it supports, you know, our – community's fishing lifestyle and our love of salmon and all of that kind of comes through the forest itself. And so we've got specifically we've identified some really, really valuable parts of the Tongass that should be under further protection to make sure that that salmon habitat can't ever be developed in a way that would harm the habitat. And so we're sort of right now doing a couple of calls to action. And so tomorrow we're going to have a big dance party. We're going to celebrate the Tongass, but we're also going to let people know kind of what's happening right now on the federal level. Senator Murkowski has put forward a couple of pieces of federal action that would potentially remove pieces of the Tongass National Forest and privatize them, which traditionally when that happens, it means logging. Mm-hmm. She's also moved to roll back the most recent update to the Tongass Land Management Plan. This is kind of nerdy stuff that I'm talking about right now. But the really important part of that is last year, after a multi-year process, 200,000 public comments were given on this plan. And as part of that, these really valuable fish habitat areas were protected. And Senator Murkowski is currently trying to roll back that plan and get rid of all those protections that were just put in place just a year ago. So we're going to let people know about that and at the same time have a really awesome dance party and boogie to Rachel and the Ratfish Wranglers.
Yeah.
Terrific. Well, there is a show tonight at 360 North. It starts at 7 p.m. It's about an hour, and that's free.
Mm-hmm.
And then the show tomorrow at the Jack is the American Salmon Forest Benefit, also starts at 7. And I understand there will be costumes. The band will be in costume. Is that correct? Mm-hmm.
Is the band going to be in costume?
It'll be cool.
It's going to be a show.
Cool lights. Actually,
outfits.
There might be a cut. There's a, rumors there might be a dinosaur showing up. But
okay.
If I just give a special shout out because the band is like, it's not Rachel, it's the Ratfish Wranglers.
I know.
You know, I mean, so really collectively, I got to say, I'm just really love this band. I do love the band, man. And we have some awesome players. Shauna Lee on vocals, Russell Wodehouse on keyboards, Brian Curtis on guitar, Chaz Gist on bass, and Steve Perro on drums. And I've been playing with these guys for many, many years. We have honed the sound. Bob Banghart is joining us. And it's, I mean, we're a tight group, and we know how to throw it down and have fun too.
If people haven't seen the Ratfish Wranglers before, it's a really, really fun show. So,
and I will guarantee you will learn something at the show. I mean, there'll be weird little sciencey things you'll come away with. I didn't know that. Yeah. So
So the two concerts are going to be pretty different. I mean, the one tonight is going to be more of a sit down, intimate kind of performance, and then tomorrow is really sort of the big dance party throwdown.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I'm sure you're going to have great turnouts for both.
Thanks.
So I hope everybody comes out tonight at 360 North, 7 p.m. Tomorrow at the Jack at 7 p.m. And we're going to go out on Fish Worship. So
is it wrong?
Thank you so much for being here today.
Quiet kind of guy, didn't have much to say. And that guy, he looked me straight in the eye, and I noticed that guy, he started to cry, and he said, every day all I can think of is fish. Every day it's my dying wish. I've been fishing so long, it's gone to my head. I love them so much, yet I kill them instead. Now I said, fish worship. Fishermen that catch and release those crazy biologists. We're all in love with that beast now. It's slime and crap.
I've done my time.
I think it's slime and crap.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon. That was Fish Worship from Ray Troll and the Ratfish Wranglers. And they'll be playing a concert tonight. We're going to use music for them from them throughout the show today. But my next guest is Deacon Charles Rohrbacher and Jackie Manning from the State Libraries and Museum. Welcome to the show, both of you.
Thanks for having
us. Thank you for having us. Yeah.
Yes. And Deacon Charles, you're an iconographer.
That's correct.
With a show opening tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
Let's start off by telling the good people, what is an iconographer?
Iconographers are men and women that usually paint, although it could be in mosaic or in bas-relief, images of Jesus, of Mary, the Mother of God, of the saints, and of salvation history. In the Eastern Orthodox and Eastern Catholic churches, but increasingly in other Christian churches in the West as well, since the mid-20th century. So I'm a Roman Catholic deacon, but this is part of my vocation is painting icons.
The exhibition is titled Windows into Heaven, Contemporary Icons. How would you describe the works that we'll see in the exhibit?
Well, it's when I applied for this solo exhibit, I asked that it be a retrospective, and so I have 35 years worth of work. I've been an icon painter since actually 38 years since 1980 when I started studying icon painting, and so it'll have paintings and relief prints mostly. Like woodcuts and other kinds of relief prints, but mostly large and small icons from churches and that people have been generously lent to me, as well as, there'll be some book illustrations too. So it's full.
There's 50 icons.
Yeah. 50 icons.
Mm-hmm. And the scale ranges from the largest one roughly like 10 feet high?
It's 8 feet by 6 feet. It's
8 feet
big.
By 6
it's
feet.
It's a big icon. Yeah.
The picture with the press release is really, really cool. So I love the style, and I look forward to seeing the whole exhibition.
Thank you.
Now, this is part your style, your painting, iconography is part of a larger movement, rediscovery of icon painting in the 21st century. So I was wondering if you could talk a bit about that. Where is it taking place? Why is it taking place?
Well, my talk actually tomorrow night is going to be about the rediscovery of icon in modern art. I'm making the argument that sort of the advent of modern art in the late 19th and early 20th century allowed people in both in Russia and in Europe and America to suddenly see traditional icons in a different way. Prior to that, they'd been viewed as being sort of defective medieval art that was. Superseded by the glories of the Renaissance and of naturalistic realism, but the coming of modern art and modern artists. You think of Cézanne, Gauguin, Matisse, Picasso. All of these artists were really trying to look at the world and paint in a really different way. And this there's a strong connection between again this movement of modern art and also the rediscovery of icons. And so this is a process that's really happened over the 20th century and now into the 21st.
Yeah, and it's some of the resurgence is influenced by has some Russian influences, and you yourself went to Russia, is
right.
That correct?
Well, I'll talk about it in the
not too many spoilers.
This is not a spoiler at all. What happened was is at the time of the Russian Revolution, again, there was this great resurgence of looking at old Russian icons. Unfortunately, with the coming of the Soviet Union, there was persecution of the Orthodox Church. Many iconographers ended up in the Gulag. Many icons were destroyed or sold off to raise money for the government, and it was abroad that mostly in Paris that you had a new generation of Russian emigre icon painters. I'm a fourth generation, I guess, student of them. My teacher was taught by the second generation, who were taught by the first generation of these emigre icon painters. After the collapse of communism, there's just been an enormous resurgence of icon painting, both in terms of iconographers, but also many of these churches that had been gutted or had been converted to other uses, like garages or storehouses, were are being re-beautified with and adorned with new icons. And so in Russia and in Eastern Europe, Romania, Serbia, Bulgaria, icon painting is experiencing a renaissance. And so that's part of the rediscovery of the icon and the reemergence of iconographers. When I started studying icon painting, I probably could have told you every iconographer who was at work in North America and in Western Europe. Now there are literally thousands and thousands of icon painters all over the world. So it's this amazing renaissance.
As a deacon in the Roman Catholic Church, how does your personal spirituality influence your work as an artist?
Oh, they're bound together. One of the reasons I began painting icons was I wanted to bring my faith and my art together. And of course, one of the most profound things about the icon is that it's focused on revealing that each person is made in the image and likeness of God. Each person is infinitely precious and worthy of respect and of consideration. And so, for me as a Christian, for me as a Catholic, that respect for human dignity and for the poor and concern for the poor and for justice is integral to the gospel faith. And this is exemplified and I think is proclaimed in the icon, because again, every icon is an encounter with God, but also an encounter with God who became human in the person of Jesus, and that image of God we're invited to see in our neighbor, in each person.
The exhibit opens tomorrow at 4:30 at the Alaska State Museum, and the talk that you will be giving is at 7 p.m.
Correct? That's correct.
All right, Jackie, I'm going to turn to you. What is your role over at the State Museum?
So I'm the curator of exhibits, and so Deacon Charles was one of eight artists, solo artists, that was selected to have an exhibition at the museum, and we're really having an amazing time working with him to get this exhibit up, and it's looking wonderful. So I really do encourage folks to come over. And the exhibit is in one of our two temporary galleries, and the talk, starting at 7, will be across the hallway in the lecture hall. So if you can make it to both, that would be fabulous. Mm-hmm. And if not, the exhibit will be up through April 21st, so you got a couple months to come check it out.
I look forward to seeing it. Is there anything else you'd like to add or anything upcoming at the museum you'd like to mention?
You know, I'd love to just add that the reception is sponsored by the Friends of the Alaska State Library Archives and Museum. And so we want to just give them a thanks for helping promote our solo artist exhibition series.
All right.
And is it free to come to this?
It's free, yes. Thank you. It's free.
Always important to mention that.
First Fridays are free and the lecture is free.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Well, thank you both for being here. It sounds like a wonderful exhibit. I love the preview. I loved hearing the backstory. And I'm sure you'll get a great turnout tonight or tomorrow night at the talk.
Thank you so much.
All right. We got another one from Rachel and the Ratfish Wranglers.
Trouble, just look through the rubble and the stuff that the mind threw away. One day laying on the ground beneath the big blue skies, a strange and wild fossil, yeah, was really quite the prize for him. Yeah, it was a Permian shark just a look in the dark of an ancient round concretion. It was round and dense, gave a curious sense of George of cosmic completion. Put it in the bed of his dirty pickup truck, smiled to himself, said, I guess that's just my luck, and drove away. Oh, the world two sharks from long ago came to rest in Pocatello, Idaho. Yeah, the more
join the Juneau Economic Development Council in Juneau February 21st through the 22nd for the Alaska Innovation Summit, the largest innovation conference in Alaska, with 300 professionals across many industries. You don't have to leave Southeast for professional development. They're bringing it to you, featuring Franz Johansson from the Medici Group, who has consulted 30% of Fortune 100 companies. He'll talk about seizing opportunities to ensure success and how diversity of skill set, experience, and profession drives innovation. Registration and information at jedc.org/innovation.
You're tuned into a Juneau Afternoon. I'm your host, Shelley Delaney, and my next guests are here from UAS Outdoor Studies to discuss the Banff Mountain Film Festival and a rally at the Capitol. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Shelley.
Thank you.
Hi, I got a full house today, so I just ask each of you to please introduce yourselves and tell me what's your connection to the program or the topic today.
Thanks, Shelley. Forrest Wagner, Assistant Professor of Outdoor Studies.
Thank you, Shelley. My name is Richard McGrail. I'm a student in the Outdoor Studies program.
Thanks, Shelley. My name is Matt, and I am also a student with the ODS program.
Thank you, Shelley. I'm Megan Busby. I'm a mathematics faculty and faculty senate president.
All right. Welcome to the show, everybody. I think this is the most guests I've ever had.
All right.
All right. Well, let's start off talking about the outdoor studies program briefly, and we'll discuss the film festival and then the rally. So, Forrest, I'm going to throw that one at you. What is the UAS outdoor studies program briefly?
Thanks, Shelley. So we're an academic program within the School of Arts and Sciences, and we sit in the humanities department and offer a number of different degree programs for students and focus on preparing individuals for either work in the outdoor industry or advancement in their personal practice as outdoor practitioners. So we focus on things like risk management and environmental ethics and kinesthetic educational opportunities, and regularly have a capstone expedition in the spring, which involves multi-week remote trips in various parts of Alaska. And this year that trip is headed up on the Juneau Ice Field. We're flying onto the Mead across from Haines. It's a large valley glacier, and then skiing home 80 miles. And as you mentioned, we're hosting Banff, which is an international film festival, and the proceeds from that are going to support the Outdoor Leadership Club and that capstone expedition on the ice field.
That sounds really cool. And what is this film festival for those who have never heard of it?
So the Banff Mountain Film Festival is an international film competition and an annual presentation of both short films and documentaries. These films are about mountain culture, sports, and the environment. The film festival as a whole was launched in 1976 as the Banff Festival of Mountain Films by the Banff Center. And it's held every fall in Banff, Alberta, Canada. So after the competition, the best films are selected and basically tour the world. And so they're going to be here in Juneau.
What is the Banff Center? What do they do apart from put together this film festival?
Yeah, they do a number of different things in the liberal arts and you know, visual arts, performing arts. It's a nonprofit educational institution, as Richard mentioned, in Banff, Alberta. And they have a large conference center, and it's really quite a stunning place to go. And so I think, yeah, the Banff Center is kind of a repository for groups interested in talking about and thinking about and celebrating human aesthetic potential.
How many films will the festival feature, or the traveling film festival, I should say, the winners?
Great question. So there are hundreds of films submitted for the November competition in Banff, and we'll be screening 8 to 12 films, depending on time. And those are the most critically acclaimed and also the most viewer appreciated films. So as the feedback comes back from audiences around Canada and the United States, the Banff Center takes that feedback and kind of decides which movies seem to be the most appreciated by the public. And so we've been updating our list of films for next week.
And you can see the trailer for the film festival online. It's pretty cool. I watched it yesterday. I really enjoyed it. When and where will the screening be held?
All right. So it'll be at Centennial Hall on February 7th and 8th. The doors will open at 6:30 p.m. and the screening will start at 7 p.m. General tickets for both nights, if you want to attend both nights, which will be different movies each night, are $25, and it'll be $15 for a one-night ticket. If you are a student at UAS, it'll be $15 for both nights and $10 for the single night. And children 6 and under are free.
Awesome. And where can we find out all that information? Is there a website or go to UAS?
Yeah, thanks. On the UAS Facebook page, all of the information's there. If you go to the Banff webpage, the information for all of their Alaska visits is there, including our show next week. And we have tickets to sell, Outdoor Studies students, Hearthside Books, and At the Door. So.
And they're selling some at the Rock Dump as well. I saw that
Excellent.
Last night.
Yep, thanks for that.
Yeah. All right. Well, those are the details of the Banff Mountain Film Festival. It's going to be a great show. The preview footage looks stunning. So thank you guys for coordinating that screening. All right. Now I'm going to turn to Megan. Megan, introduce yourself again, please.
Sure. I'm Megan Busby. I'm a mathematics faculty member at UAS, and I'm the UAS Faculty Senate President. I'm coordinating this along with our student government, and it's a rally to support the University of Alaska system as a whole. And so we're getting together tomorrow, Friday afternoon, over the lunch hour from 12 to 1 p.m. And it's at the State Capitol building. And we would love for the public to come out and show their support. We have several speakers. I'm excited about what they're going to say. They're all going to talk about the opportunities and the impacts the university has had on their lives and in each of their communities.
I like the tagline, a great state needs a great university.
You got it.
That's downtown tomorrow on the steps of the Capitol from noon to 1, tomorrow, Friday, February 2nd. Thank you for helping to coordinate that.
Thanks very much for having me.
All right. Well, thank you all for being here today. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
Just that, yeah, the event tomorrow is noon to 1, support the university, and the Banff Mountain Film Festival is next week, Wednesday and Thursday, the 7th and 8th of February, 6:30. Doors open, it's 7 to 9-ish p.m. both nights.
All right. Be there or be bored.
Yeah.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you, Shelley.
This is Bird Note. Birds like finches and cardinals love sunflower seeds, which they take into their stout triangular beaks one after the other. In the blink of an eye, they extract the nutritious contents, and they do it so fast it looks like a magician's sleight of hand. But if we magnify the process and slow it down, we can see how it works. First, if we look inside a finch's beak, we see a groove that runs the length of the beak on the cutting edge of the upper half. The lower half of the beak slides into it perfectly. When a finch plucks a sunflower seed from the feeder, it uses its tongue to maneuver the seed lengthwise into that groove. As it closes its beak, a slight back-and-forth action slices open the hull, and a small sideways movement husks the seed, while the tongue may help extract the kernel. Now it's quickly onto the next seed. Maneuver, slice, husk and extract, swallow. Chickadees lack the heavy-duty seed-slicing beak of a finch, but they still partake of countless sunflower seeds. A chickadee takes one sunflower seed at a time from the feeder, flies to a nearby perch where it can hold the seed atop a branch, then hammers and chips the hull open with the tip of the bill to extract the goods. In that amount of time, a hungry finch might easily open and consume half a dozen seeds. For BirdNote, I'm Michael Stein.
You're tuned in to a Juno Afternoon. It is about 14 minutes to the top of the hour, and with me is the one and only Nancy DeCherney here for Arts Up. How you doing, Nancy?
Well, it's windy out there.
Was it a long walk from the Jack?
It was.
It feels long with 50 mile per hour winds.
Yes, icy winds. Yes, so it's First Friday. We have lots of things going on. It's also February, and everything is just bursting forward. So start out by coming to the Jack and picking up your little map, your little guide. Patty Hutchins Jupe is in our gallery. It's an amazing show. It's hard to explain, underwater sort of a feeling. There's backlit paintings. It's a very subdued lighting. It's lovely. So come on and see that.
I heard about that exhibit on a Juno Afternoon this week.
Really already?
Yes. I believe she was talking about that. It sounded really cool.
It caught
my attention because they said all the lights will be off and it's just going to be lit up with the artwork, and that just sounds
beautiful.
Really appealing.
And following it, we have Ray Troll and the Ratfish Wranglers are going to be performing.
I believe I heard about that one, too.
Seven, so lots to do at the Jack. Then over at the APK, Charles Rohrbacher, Windows into Heaven, Contemporary Icons. He will be doing a talk from 7 to 8. But
he was just here a couple guests ago.
Everything will be on sale. So I don't have to say this. I'm going back home now. A Little Bazaar, which is the little store that's over by the bridge, is having a birthday cake for Chad and paintings by Teresa. So stop in over there. If you haven't ever been there, it's the cutest little store.
Who's
Chad? It's called A Little Bazaar. Chad must be her son. He's turning 18.
Okay, cool.
And Teresa's just now putting out some of her paintings she's never exhibited before. And we're pointing out that it is Valentine's coming up, so keep that in mind. At the city, Juno Douglas City Museum, Seeing Faces with Abel Ryan, and they also want to feature some of their, it's called Life on the Water, is a new maritime-based exhibit in the General History Gallery. So that's going to be up for a while, but it's new, so you might want to get over there and see that. Sketch is doing an interactive paper installation. MK is creating a giant paper thing in her Sketch studio. I don't know what it is. And she's making delicious low-sugar Valentine gifts of homemade biscotti. So stop in. Sketch Studio is on Front Street, sort of behind the restaurant on the parking lot there. Alaska
You're driving
Robotics.
Up Main and you look to the right on that corner.
Yeah,
you can
there's
see
a big
it.
Sign on the wall to help you get there now. Alaska Robotics on Front Street has Jessica Hanlon. She's a contemporary watercolor painter from here who's amazing creatures that she does. Annie Kales has Abby Foch and Gled Ohard. They are, Abby does beautiful jewelry. Need we say Valentine's Day again? Okay. Pressing
on. In case anyone needs a heads out there.
Need some help. At the Walter Soboloff Building, Tlingit artist James Hart from Haines, who does carvings. Tim Brown from Yakutat, who has sea otter and seal fur scarves and that sort of thing. And Sam Shakely will be carving engraved copper, silver, and gold jewelry. So nice to stop in there. Downtown Dave's has a Freya Romance Boutique pop-up.
I don't know what that is.
Well, Freya has a store.
Oh, the Freya pop-up boutique. Yes. I actually learned all about them at Stylorama.
Okay.
Yeah, they got good stuff.
Okay.
That's great. So now I know what it is.
Okay. It'll be downtown. It'll be at Downtown Dave's. The Canvas has a collection of graphite, charcoal, and pastels from canvas artist Mike Godkin. Barnaby Brewing has Marissa Amor. I'm not sure if that's how we say her last name, but that's how I said it. She and they are also introducing a cinnamon candy beer. Then you go over to the Amalga Distillery. Donovan Johnson, who's a photographer from Los Angeles, is exhibiting there. Let's see. We are going to go down to Kindred Post. Mac Provisions is having a pop-up shop. They make cool stuff out of old leather, like vintage baseball gloves and L.L. Bean hunting boots and stuff like that. So interesting things at Kindred Post, and she usually has snacks, so stop in there. Juno Artist Gallery has Chef Steph, also probably a lot of good, yummy things there. We have, and in the same building, Harbor Tea and Spices featuring Love Potion 907, which is a tea that they've blended. So
That's
it's
a
just,
good name.
Yeah. This is also a week to go see William Ink over at Perseverance Theater. Again, I always tell people, you think you got plenty of time, but you don't.
Mm-hmm.
It's so the true. Jump Festival. Have you been talking to those folks?
Mm-hmm. I don't think they've been in this week, but we did. I did a little PSA. We've got it's happening tonight, tomorrow, and Saturday.
Yep.
And it's free.
Tickets are free, but you probably need to go on down there on an early time schedule. It's the Gold Town Nickelodeon. Everything is by local filmmakers. We have World Quest at 6 p.m. over at Centennial Hall, the best trivia night in town.
Mm-hmm.
So come and play while eating dinner. It supports the World Affairs Council activities. You can get tickets at jwac.org. But as I mentioned, Rachel, we also have a Bartlett Lecture Series out at the UAS Egan Lecture Hall. Marika Anthony Shaw is doing speaking about philanthropy. She used to be a rock and roll star, and she's opened, I can't remember the name of her philanthropy effort, but she is talking to people about doing that, and we think everyone should do that, so do. There is dog portraits at the State Museum from 10 to 12 for kids ages 6 to 9. Noble Koch is teaching you how to do pictures of your dogs.
Yeah, dog lovers only.
And then in the afternoon, it is for the older children. There's a garage sale and art show fundraiser at the Moose Lodge from 10 to 3. They're looking for donations for the garage sale, and they're looking for vendors to come set up their own tables. The proceeds help support the elementary school art show that we do every year. And they also are going to be helping to support the summer lunch program. So stop in out at the Moose Lodge on Saturday. There's a Fiber Arts with Amy O'Neill Houck. There's a garden club meeting. There's, I bet you want to talk about this.
our silent guest in the studio. This is a good time to introduce Sarah Schaefer, who is, what is your title here at KTOO, Sarah?
Development Director.
All right, Development Director.
Must
and
be a fundraiser.
Oh, yes.
A fundraiser.
And it is our very own fundraiser, the KTOO and Taco Fishery Seafood Fest this weekend, this Saturday at 6 o'clock. We have a brew tasting with Alaska Brewing Company that is sold out between 5 and 6. And then at 6, we open the doors for the restaurants to serve up their great seafood. I just delivered 540 pounds of fresh seafood today.
Personally.
Personally today to all the restaurants, 8 restaurants. And they're going to be dishing up 15 separate dishes for people to taste. There's going to be desserts too, ice cream and shaved ice and hand-forged cookies and more cookies. And it's just going to be lovely. Salt's going to do a no-host bar featuring Amalga Distillery with their own G&Ts and, of course, Alaska Brewing Company beer. So we are so excited. We have very limited seats left. So, yes, get online, kto.org, and get your tickets.
Yeah, thank you, Sarah.
And there's, of course, other things that you could be doing. If you don't get your tickets to KTOO Seafood Fest at 7 o'clock, it's the Catholic Community Services Classy and Sassy Formal Gala over at the Elizabeth Pradovich Hall. Get dressed up. Join us for an evening of dinner, beer, and wine, silent auction, live music, a DJ, and a photo booth. So you can get tickets. I think you call. If you need information on where to get all this stuff, go to jahc.org to the calendar.
Yeah, that's a lot. There's
the
list just seems to go on and on.
And on and on. And by the way,
and that's just this weekend.
That's just this weekend. We haven't even got to Sunday yet. And I want to mention that we've started having on Sunday at 5:30 every Sunday night fusion dance lessons with Monica and Patrick. And it's by donation. So come on down and do that sort of thing. I want to also mention that we're down to 170 tickets at the for the wearable art shows, which is coming up pretty soon. I just hate to think how soon it is, but there you have it.
I believe it's the 16th, February 16th.
Yeah, 17th and 18th
oh,
is 17th coming.
And 18th, sorry.
There's a Goldtown music concert over at the Resurrection Lutheran Hall, and they've got Tom Loker, Alyssa Fisher, Jocelyn Miles, Riley Woodford, Costa and friends. It's a $5 donation. It's a really fun event over there. There's an improv first Saturday at Goldtown Nick, Saturday at 9 p.m. And there's a Cajun Club happening at the Red Dog Saloon. There is just so much going on. Tuesday, I feel like there was something important that I needed to tell you about. It is coming up. There's a Valentine's Tea Party at the Salvation Army on Wednesday from 10 to 12. There is, I think, well, maybe we'll talk about that stuff next year, but or next week.
Next
but there's
year.
Next year. But really do go online because there's just a whole bunch of stuff going on all the way through the week. And a lot of it is just going to be lots of fun.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Nancy, for all of that great information and also the
Did we do the First Friday?
Yes, we did all the First Friday stuff. Whew. Most important is the website where you can find all of that information if you didn't catch it the first time around here.
Oh, so much going on.
Yeah.
Goodness.
And then again, Seafood Fest.
And you know what? I just had this perfect night envisioning you go to Seafood Fest, you eat delicious seafood and get desserts and all that, and then you're all in a good mood, and then you go to improv night afterwards because you're in such a good mood.
Yes.
Doesn't that sound great?
There are so many things you could do next. It's amazing. And, you know, I want to just say that the calendar is very complicated in this town. We are going to have our annual calendaring meeting on April 2nd. Plan to be there so your fundraiser doesn't go head-to-head with somebody else's
That's
fundraiser.
A really, really good suggestion. All right. Well, thank you both for being here. And, yeah, it's plenty to do this weekend, so don't get overwhelmed. Thanks for tuning in today to a Juno Afternoon. On tomorrow's show, we'll talk with the Forest Service entomologist Elizabeth Graham for her Friday fireside talk at the Mendenhall Glacier Visitor Center. She'll be talking about insects and spruce trees. Robert Venables will offer an update on the mid-session summit. We'll talk with some JDHS basketball players about this weekend's fundraiser for the Cancer Connection. Ed Byarski will be here to highlight dirt. And Sarah Schaefer will be back again to plug the Seafood Fest. That's tomorrow live at 3 on KTOO. Today's show, we had Ray Troll and Aaron Heist. We had Deacon Charles, the iconographer, whose show is opening tomorrow at the State Museum. And we had a whole bunch of people from UAS Outdoor Studies Program talking about the Banff Mountain Film Festival, among other things. And we wrapped it up with Nancy DeCherney. All the music today was from Ray Troll and the Ratfish Wranglers. Jeff Brown's producer. I'm your host, Shelley Delaney. This has been a Juno Afternoon. Have a great Juno evening.